We all know your time is valuable. Whether you're hyper-focused on admin tasks like notes and billing, or simply trying to make a cup of coffee, or even run to the bathroom in between appointments, constant interruptions can derail your day. This podcast is sponsored by The Receptionist for iPad, a digital check-in system that eliminates the need to walk back and forth from your office to the waiting room to see if your next appointment has arrived. Clients can securely check in for their appointments, and you'll be immediately notified by text, email, or your preferred channel. Break free from interruptions and make the most of your time. I've been using them for almost 3 years now, and it saves me hours in my week. Start a 14-day free trial of The Receptionist for iPad by going to thereceptionist.com/private practice. Make sure to start your trial with that link, and you'll also get your first month free if you decide to sign up. Hey everyone, welcome back to the All Things Private Practice podcast, joined today by Amanda Loesch. She is an ADHD therapist and private practice owner living in the Chicago suburbs, specializing in developmental trauma. Amanda recently took time away from direct practice to become a caregiver to her neurodivergent family. Between drop-offs and naps, she is building a resource network in her community for neurodivergent families and providing education on safety, accessibility, and inclusion to local organizations. She enjoys exploring the intersection of neurodivergent parenting, chronic health, and developmental trauma. You can find content about the realities of parenting a neurodivergent family on Instagram at complex.motherhood, and you can find local resources if in the Chicagoland area on ND Family Guide. We'll have that in the show notes, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we've been like talking back and forth on Instagram for a couple months, it seems like, and I've been traveling about collabing. And then I was like, why don't you just come on the podcast? Because I think that might be a bit easier.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm happy to have you here. I wanted to talk about doing all the things as a neurodivergent therapist, business owner. You're a mother, parent.
Yeah.
There's a lot. And we've been talking about
a lot.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely something that has changed my practice dramatically. And I'm very happy that I have the flexibility of private practice because I've been able to make a lot of changes over the years to fit the evolving needs of my family.
Yep.
And that kind of came to a head at the beginning of this summer when I took a step away from seeing clients, direct practice, and I'm focusing more on something that fits better into the rhythm of my life right now.
Sure.
But even still, I'm just hanging on.
I feel for you, you know, as someone who's not a parent, you know, I know there's an extra layer there. And I think a lot of people can resonate to just hanging on right now. And so when you step away from practicing back in the summer, what kind of emotions are going on? What kind of feelings are kind of percolating?
The first one that came up, I think, was grief, because at the beginning of the year, I had reopened a physical practice. I closed about 1 year into COVID because I was just paying for an office to sit empty. So this was the first time I had a physical space again, and both my children were about to be in daycare. So I was like, oh, a focus on my career. I'm coming back after like 4 years of being postpartum, new parent, and then it became necessary for me, for my family's needs, but also due to my own capacity to say no to seeing clients. So there was a lot of grief that came up initially, and maybe even some relief, because the amount of energy and emotional capacity that my family was needing was so high that making more room to give it to each individual client was killing me.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I can empathize with that. And stepping away, you know, I think when I stepped away from seeing clients back in 2022, my coaching practice was taking off, but I just had a second major throat surgery and one of my vocal cords was paralyzed in the process. And I felt like I was abandoning the profession that I had worked really hard for.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of grief, especially around identity of like, who am I if I'm not practicing as a mental health therapist? Like,
right.
I've worked so hard to get this license and all these hoops. And I had been so wrapped up in that as like, this is who I am as a human. And it was, there was grief in that release and that acknowledgement that this season of life is over for now. And right. Then there was also relief, like you were mentioning, like there was like this big exhale of like, but it feels like a lot of pressure that I'm releasing and letting go of.
Well, it's one of those jobs where you have to be able to be highly present, to be able to have the ability to hold so many different pieces in your mind at one time. And I was feeling like the level of care that I was providing wasn't up to par with what I wanted it to be and what they needed it to be. So, you know, there's always those days where you kind of like dream about like, what would it be like to work at Starbucks and not have to hold all of these things? But at the end of the day, it is such a privilege to be able to do that. And yep. So some of those bigger questions that you were mentioning, like I've kind of been in this role my whole life mm-hmm. in some ways. And so it's been interesting to find parts of my identity and to get to know different parts of myself outside of being a therapist. So a little bit of the both and there for sure.
The both and is such a therapist.
I know.
Statement, right? It's one of my favorites because I think there is such a duality in everything that we do.
Yes.
And holding both sides of it, there's heaviness. And there is the realization of this job is so meaningful, but I have to, like you said, be present to do it right. Well.
Right.
And for me, and it probably for you, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Like if I can't do it with every ounce of energy yeah. that I have, I can't allow myself to do it because I have to be all in.
Right. It's too important. People are inviting you into the hardest and most beautiful parts of their life. And so that's not something I've ever taken lightly. And that's something that really matters to me. And so when there's any compromising to that, absolutely hard to step away, but necessary to step away at the same time. And then like, there's this other piece too, that has been kind of coming up of like, I've spent the last 10 years helping other people heal from their own childhood. And now I'm allowing myself to focus on creating a childhood for my children that they'll still need to heal from, I'm sure, because they're like not perfect in any way, shape or form, but allowing that to be the focus has been a bit of a helpful reframe for me.
I love that. I love that. And I think stepping back, right, whenever we have this big shift, whether it's career-wise, professionally, personally, and we experience that grief, we also experience that almost new season of life. And it sounds like being able to move into that space for yourself to say, I'm going to offer my kids and my family a very different experience. And by being present, by using the skills that I have, I can offer that and I can cultivate that. And yeah. I think that means helping your community in a different way, right? Opposed to one-on-one therapy, 60-minute increments of time,
right?
You get to have a ripple effect in a different way. And I see some of your videos about like kind of going over accessibility or lack thereof of different places that you visit as a family. And I think that's so cool because it offers the community a glimpse into this world, and it allows them to say like, this is something I have to pay attention to, or I'm really glad to know this, or this is really helpful. And you're actually supporting people in a different way instead of doing one-on-one therapy.
Thanks. Yeah, that's my hope. I've learned that as a neurodivergent parent of a neurodivergent child, we can't necessarily just go places and do things in the same way that everybody else can. And so I was really wondering, like, is this place going to be safe for my child? Is there a risk of eloping here? Is there open water? Is this fenced in? What supports are available for them? And so I began asking those questions and figuring out, hey, here are some spaces that really work for families like ours, and here are spaces that really need some support. And so this fits into my day-to-day life better. I review places. I'm building a directory of neuroaffirming providers, just trying to answer this question of like, we are a neurodivergent family. What do we do now? Yep. Because like I am a therapist. I've been in this field for a long time and I struggled with it. And so if it's hard for me, I had to assume a lot of other families are working really hard to figure out what to do. So hopefully this is a way that I can still contribute, like you mentioned, even if it's not one-on-one therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's beautiful of like an evolution transformation. And for me, that's been a process, you know, like I had to come to terms with, okay, if my voice is forever impacted, and it's getting a lot better actually now, but like that was 3 years ago, what does this mean for me in a career where like I'm speaking a lot, where I am podcasting, where I'm speaking at conferences, when I'm coaching, when I'm hosting retreats, like everything shifted. And having to almost like restructure and reconfigure my entire life, but also having the privilege to say, I get to step back and restructure and reconfigure my entire life. I don't ever take that for granted.
Yeah.
And it's been a evolution. And it's, you know, there's seasons to this life as like an entrepreneurial therapist or a small business owner.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever was going to be a one-on-one therapist my entire life, even if I didn't have the health stuff come up. I just think that ultimately I was going to get too bored of it, of doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I think just absorbing way too much energy in general and coming out of sessions so unbelievably depleted energetically that like it just wasn't working for my lifestyle anymore. And I imagine as a parent having similar experiences where you're like, I have to leave session and now I have to focus attention elsewhere in different parts of my life and really dig deep in energy reserves that I may not have.
Oh yeah. The well was so overdrawn. Like, the last, let's see, maybe 2.5 years, as my child, we were questioning diagnosis, going through the process, figuring out how to support them has been such a journey, and the amount of emotional labor, like finding places, asking questions, advocating, but then also being present enough to manage these meltdowns, these shutdowns, these behavioral challenges that we didn't understand. You know, you close your laptop on the session, you open the door, I work from home. And then it's all waiting for you until 10 p.m. Then they wake up in the middle of the night, wake up at 6 in the morning. It's like, I was feeling so, I still feel so overdrawn even without seeing clients. But you mentioned like the health stuff, my mental and my physical health was declining at such an accelerated pace.
Yeah. Yeah. I can really relate to that. Even as a person who owns my own businesses and gets to set my own hours and all the things, like we live in a capitalist society. There feels like there's pressure all the time to be creating or doing more.
Right.
I have to make money. Like it's just a reality for me. And my health is deteriorating all of the time. I get sick all of the time. And it's really hard. And I often talk with Dr. Neff on my other podcast, Divergent Conversations. We talk about the privilege of being able to work from home and own our own businesses and set our own hours. And I just, you know, I am very aware that a lot of people listening may not have that privilege and have to go to a 9-to-5 or have to go to a structured workplace. And, you know, my heart goes out to all of you who don't have the ability to work from home or set your own hours or have control over the situation, because I don't know what I would do without that. I don't think I would be able to do it. And now we are going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Alma. When I first decided to go in network with insurance, I found the whole process overwhelming. I can actually remember a couple of days that made me want to cry, where I spent hours on the phone being transferred or hung up on, or not giving clear answers or instructions. I knew I needed to get paid, and I also knew that I didn't know if I could do this by myself. If you're running into those same challenges, Alma can help. They made it easy to get credentialed a lot faster, handled all of the paperwork, and offered way better rates than I could have gotten on my own. They also make sure I get reimbursed within 2 weeks of every session so that I know when I'm getting paid. Visit helloalma.com/ATPP to learn more. That's hello, ALMA.com/ATPP.
When I worked in a community agency setting, I found it so incompatible with my needs.
Yeah.
It was so rough. And, you know, there's a certain amount of years you've kind of got to pay your dues in that sense. And I am very fortunate that I've been able to shift to private practice. And I did that out of necessity because I wasn't able to pay my mortgage doing that. But it can be really challenging without the supports in place, and even with the supports in place too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think back to my agency days. I don't miss them at all. I don't know how I survived the 2.5 years that I did. I've told stories on this podcast before about the burnout and ending up in the hospital and being concerned about like, how am I going to get my hours done this week while I'm in the hospital?
Right.
How am I going to meet productivity? And I was a managing director at the time of a program, a 24-hour crisis program that didn't close. So I'm like, how do I make sure we're staffed and like do A, B, and C while lying in the hospital bed? And it's just like, this is not sustainable. And this was pre-autism ADHD discovery. So like, I really didn't have a sense of like why things felt so overwhelming all of the time.
Yes.
And I just assumed like, it's me. Like there's something that I'm doing wrong here. And like, I'm the reason I'm struggling so badly. And, you know, coming to terms with that and unpacking a lot of that internalized ableism and just relearning and reconstructing a lot of my own beliefs around disability and just acknowledging like, I am not designed to go to a crisis environment 12 hours a day, 4 days a week and work in a setting like that ever again. I don't think I would survive it.
Yeah. Yeah, that I cannot imagine being in a hospital bed and trying to manage all the logistics of that. I wasn't in a hospital bed for that reason, but for my physical health, yes. I was in and out of all sorts of facilities trying to get answers, pre-discovery as well. And I felt like I was getting on a better path with that once I got out of the agency setting and then I became a parent. And had a really similar experience there of like, this is the first time I haven't been able to take breaks from sound to be able to have alone time. This is the first time I haven't been able to just use my coping skills. And I found myself asking that same question of like, why is this so hard for me? This must be a personal issue. If like at the time I had just one child, now I have two. And I was like, I'm looking around and everyone's like, this is the most beautiful thing that's ever happened to me. And I'm like, I'm dying out here. I don't know what to do. And so having that framework to understand myself in definitely allows me to shame myself less and to adopt like a more realistic view of what I need and how I can and can't move through the world. But it's definitely such a difficult place to be in when you're, this is something that we say in my model of therapy, like internalizing the failure of the environment. It's a failure of self.
Yeah.
So deeply. And then you have your discovery and you're like, oh.
Yep. If only all of these things were different, then things would be a little bit more manageable.
Right.
Yeah, it's tough. So I know a lot of people who are late in life diagnosed or discovering their autism or ADHD was because they became parents and because all of a sudden what you're experiencing, like that sensory overwhelm, being pretty constant and unavoidable, or seeing it in your kiddo. Is that what led to discovery, or was it a different pathway?
It was kind of both. So I was diagnosed with ADHD in high school. So that was information that I had going in. However, when my son started experiencing a lot of these challenges that we didn't understand or trying to get more support on, they had recommended that we get an autism evaluation. And you notice a lot of the same things that they're experiencing as part of your own internal experience. And you're like, oh, that seems like something I would do, or I react that way, or I felt that way, or I really understand what he's experiencing in a way that my husband was struggling to understand. And so we ended up kind of going through that process together and ended up having diagnoses a couple of weeks from each other on the autism front, and really entered into this new chapter of modifying our family's needs and expectations just about a little over a year ago together. So some of the information was new. Some of the information has been hanging around since high school, but it was definitely a very interesting experience to have that missing piece finally come together after all these years.
Yeah, for sure. And being able to see it with your child as well, and then having the ability to step back as a therapist and someone who's trained in a lot of strategy and support, it's interesting to like reevaluate everything in your life. And
yeah,
like we've been talking about on Instagram, but still experiencing these massive pendulum swings of burnout and depletion and overexertion and pushing beyond limitation.
Right.
It's fucking messy.
It is. And I think one of the things that I like that we were talking about is coming towards acceptance of our own energy patterns. So for me, I had this expectation that there was like this magic ratio that I would hit, that I would achieve work-life balance or things would feel sustainable for me. But what I was noticing is that I would have like a couple of weeks where I was very motivated. I was like hyper-focused. I was working on things kind of all the time. And then I would crash, and sort of moving back and forth between, I'm so invested, I'm so into this, I'm very motivated, and I can't get off the couch.
Yep.
And I struggled at first to see that as just like a normal part of how my brain and body works. So I was like, this isn't right. Like, how can I get towards that magic ratio? And now I'm trying to understand like, okay, maybe this is just how I am. And can I work with this system? Can I learn to expect this crash? Can I support myself through it? And then how do I, you know, move out of it on the other end has become a much better way of viewing myself in my energy pattern than shaming myself for not being, I don't even know what is typical, but what I thought was typical.
I love that. Yeah. And that's a great reframe in that. And I've done a lot of the same. It's taken a lot of work, but I have acknowledged that like I work in bursts. Like I will get bursts of energy. Yes. I will get bursts of creativity. They will not last forever.
Mm-hmm.
In them, I know I need to maximize them. And I've also allowed myself to acknowledge that they will be fleeting. And I used to grieve that. I used to grieve the fact that like, I know this will not be here forever. I won't feel this way for a long extended time. But now I'm just appreciating the fact that they exist. And when I have the energy and the capacity and the creativity, I know I will do really special, spectacular things. And otherwise I'm like on my couch watching the same cooking competitions, Lord of the Rings, other things that are special interests, and like allowing myself to just exist in those seasons of life. And it's been really changing and life altering for me to be able to have acceptance over that.
Absolutely. So I do a model of therapy called NARM, which is the neuroaffective relational model. And one of the things we talk about is like this ebbing and flow of expansion and contraction, and that both of those things are necessary, like an inhale and an exhale. So I like the idea of like on that exhale, we're being creative, we're being productive, and then we kind of pull back in our contraction and we trust that the expansion will come again.
Yes.
Versus that scarcity mindset, which is really easy for me to get into. So yeah, it's been a journey of like accepting and then also trusting and allowing myself to do that instead of, again, forcing myself or efforting towards this different model that doesn't work for, it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I absolutely love that, that expansion versus contraction and acknowledging like it will, it's kind of a cycle, right? Like
that
creativity will come back. I can't exactly say when, but it will come back. I have to trust that because when I try to force it, that is when I destroy myself.
Yeah.
And that's when unhealthy habits take over. That's when sleep gets even worse than it usually is.
Yeah.
That's when like become more dysregulated more easily and just acknowledging like, okay, there is an ebb and flow. And right now what my body has been telling me with all of the illnesses and getting sick constantly and traveling and being in airports and airplanes and all around the world for the last 4 years is you've pushed way beyond your limits and you now need to move into a season of dormancy and hibernation, but it is not a permanent state. And I think that is important for me to remind myself of, because otherwise I will try to push myself out of it prematurely and cause even more damage and destruction.
Right.
And I think that's just a lot of self-compassion that is hard a lot of the time, but also a lot of acceptance and patience and just permission.
Right. Yeah. I think that's another thing that we talk a lot about in NARM as well, which is like, where do we have agency? Like when my body and my mind can't keep up, I don't have the same physical agency that I usually do, but I do have this capacity in my own mind to relate to myself in a different way. And so what if I didn't shame myself? What if I didn't guilt myself? What if I didn't pressure myself or tried to? Like, where can I still find those small pockets of agency? And for me, that a lot of times looks like I do a lot of playing with my kids. It's like I'm laying here and we're playing a game that allows me to do that. Or like when I have really bad migraine, I can like my kids know to get me my head ice and I'm still like doing the motions that go along with our songs and trying to participate in a modified way and letting that be enough is realistically that's what my 100% is right now. And so, you know, is it possible to give myself a bit more understanding and take the pressure off a bit in those moments? So we just can't be on 100% of the time.
No. I love that. I really do. And I'm sure a lot of people listening will find that to be unbelievably helpful. And it's just giving yourself permission to exist, right? To show up as you can. And to remove that guilt and shame, that's so challenging for so many of us, but that is really, truly not only loving ourselves, but really setting that foundation and modeling that behavior too.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of reasons why that's hard. And I think that intersects with a lot of the developmental trauma work that we do. And so sometimes I like to say, like, even if I catch myself shaming myself, can I not shame myself for shaming myself? A little bit inception, but like, what's the level that we can start at? If you come into a moment of awareness and realize you're sort of beating the crap out of yourself, can we just notice that and then pull back a little bit? Even that is agency. Even that is taking a step towards caring for ourselves in a different way. So I've definitely had to start there with a lot of things.
I love that. It's really a great takeaway. As we kind of move into our wrap up, anything that you want to leave people with that are listening that are in neurodivergent families that are trying to balance all of the things in terms of how they move forward and maybe something they could start putting into place going forward as well?
I think that piece about beginning to notice with curiosity, like I sometimes ask myself about the tone of my thoughts, which is like, why am I doing that versus wonder why I'm doing that. You know, like that shift in tone feels so important. And so sometimes like in therapy, we call it like curious judgment instead of just judgment.
Yeah.
So if we can begin to build some awareness and pair that with some curiosity and begin moving ourselves down the scale, if we're starting at like self-rejection and intense judgment, just take little steps over time. It's a big jump to go right towards, I unashamedly love everything about myself.
Right.
And so like, where are those like micro steps that we can take to notice and be curious and be with ourselves a little bit more, a little bit more, and a little bit more.
I love that. And for all of you listening, you know, you all know Ted Lasso is a favorite of mine. So his be curious, not judgmental quotes always come to mind. So you can always frame it that way. And that's super helpful. And I really love that. So, thank you for making the time and just coming on and using some of our limited energy together. And yeah, share with the audience where they can find what you're doing, because the stuff you're offering in social media communities is really, really cool. And I've really enjoyed watching all of the things that you're creating and putting out into the world.
I appreciate that. If you are interested in having community around being a neurodivergent parent, you can follow my Instagram. It's @complex.motherhood. And if you are in the Chicago area and you are looking for resources, support, and in-person community, you can follow on Instagram @ndfamilyguide. So we got different kinds of community, whether you're virtual or in person. There's hopefully a little bit for everyone, no matter where you are.
I love that. And we'll have all of that linked in the show notes so that you have easy access to everything Amanda said. And I really appreciate you coming on and making the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. To everyone listening to the All Things Private Practice podcast, new episodes are out on Saturdays on all major platforms and YouTube. Like, download, subscribe, share. Doubt yourself, do it anyway. And we'll see you next week.